So yesterday, guys, to review, we went through the various proofs to try to define what are the five grains and whether oats are part of it. And we noted that the Gemara, one proof, it has to do with the visual, right, whether it grows in rows or not. Then there's the question of what does lachmitz mean? Does it mean to rise? Does it mean to ferment? Is it plausibly a subspecies of barley or not? Gabe, you want to come here for a second? So Gabe very nicely went and walked around Modian, as I told you, you could do, and got three, oats that were there and other grazes. Yes, quickly get it. So as you can see, this is rye. Okay? You can see how it looks. This is oats. Right? This is oats. Okay? Maybe. I think this might also be a grain. I think this might be wheat or something. These are grains. This is oats. Oats looks different. Okay? Thank you. That is just grass. As far as we can tell. We may be wrong. Okay. You know. Look, at least you didn't accidentally find something illegal growing. You know, that would have been bad. So we pointed out yesterday that there are different ways that you could push back on Felix's conclusion based on all the reasons we saw yesterday that oats are not one of the grains. So one of them is to come up with a Masorah-based argument, which I said to me is very problematic because it's not like he's trying to overturn the Masorah. He's just saying follow the other Shita and Rishonim, which to me is like not an affront on the Masorah. I don't know. It's like really
Trump's reality.
Yeah, right? So the other one is to say that Masorah trumps reality. That's correct. Now, I told you that this is not necessarily like a left-right divide, a Haredi, non-Haredi divide. It's just not. So I was talking to Rai Sklar about this during Seder. I'll give you an example, okay? This was an example I once heard from, from Rabbi J.J. Schachter. And it was in the context of whether you could marry Ethiopian Jews. Okay, which is tied up in a lot of historical claims, right? But tied up in a lot of historical claims and the like. Without getting to the whole sugya, he pointed out that if I asked, let's say, someone who identified as modern and liberal, you can imagine who I have someone in mind, unfortunately, but you can imagine who I have in mind. That's not the point.
He's read a cautious book before.
What?
He's read a cautious book.
He might have read a cautious book before, yeah. I asked you to put the values on the table that you would say distinguish you from the Haredi world. So one of them might be, you know, the value of inclusiveness and da 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 da. The other might be that we care about science, right? We care about history. So Rabbi Schachter pointed out, yeah, but you don't actually, it's very hard to accept both of those values here because historically, the better historical evidence, speaking as a historian, not me, Rabbi Schachter, is that it might be problematic. The halachic claims that justify marrying them are problematic from a historical perspective, right? So you have to actually choose. And he notes that Bovadia, people celebrate, oh, he was inclusive, he allowed them to marry. But the way he got there was by saying, I don't care what the historians say, the Radbaz said it was okay, and I care about Masorah, I don't care about history. Right? And he said, you can't always have both. Right? Meaning, right, because being a modern person may have certain value, right, value claims and certain epistemic claims about how history works and science works and the like. In this case, to be inclusive, you have to sort of ignore some of the historical evidence, right? You can't have both. And that is a very problematic place to be in if you identify, right? If your identity is wrapped up in these, you know, these series of values, some of which are epistemic and some of them which are moral, right? You can't just take whichever you want. Now, at some level, and that's just important to keep in mind. So here you have the interesting thing where I can't tell you, that's why it's important for me to tell you, you can't just say, well, what is the Haredi approach as Rav Efrati, which is Misora, 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 I don't care about science, right? And then say, and the modern approach would be, we embrace science. That, it just doesn't work that way, right? This is not like a binary. you can be someone who appreciates science and think that, okay, but we have high, very high bars, or maybe you're not convinced by the science, right? We saw there were certain scientists that weren't convinced by, and they said, no, maybe chimutz isn't about rising, it's about beta amylase and fermentation, right? So you could be the safrais, right, who say, right, maybe Dagon, against the simple pshat in the Gemara, is more of a stand-in for a lot of different things, and therefore oats gets in. Right, to keep that in mind, right, that you can't predict in advance and just say someone is, right, this goes back to our conversation before about the judicial reform, right? One of the things I just don't like in general, in law, is where you can conclusively predict what everybody's conclusion is going to be, based on the you might have certain predilections, you might have certain intuitions that guide you, but law is complex, right? You have to be honest about the sources, right? And and here too, I don't want you to think that you can predict and say, well, if you're modern, obviously you're going to accept one approach. So highlight it, as I mentioned yesterday, Rabbi Dov Linzer, right, who is the head of Yeshiva Chovei Beitar, which is on the left flank of Orthodoxy, he also ends up not so far from Rebbe Fati, right? And that's what I gave you here in 14, right? So I don't know, right? Meaning, look, if you ask me, right, Rav Schechter is often viewed on, let's say, the right flank of modern Orthodoxy, okay? I know we're getting into, like, religious politics, which is slightly ridiculous, okay? Right? But it happens to me that when it comes to scientific issues, right, and historical issues, right, he is very, very extreme. And he basically says that if science or history proves that something is true, then it's true. And that's why, despite the fact that the Rav was insistent that you couldn't bring back Tchilet without a Mesorah, history wasn't enough, Rav Schechter took it as obvious that you can. That's why Rav Schechter and all his Talmidim wear Tchilet. Right? Rav Schechter is very insistent. And that's why Rav Schechter thinks that you cannot make mizon out of oats, right? Because he thinks that the science doesn't hold up, right? And if I asked you in a vacuum, right, you would say, oh, that's like a very modern approach, right? But modern, I put in quotes because, like, what does modern mean? Meaning he has a certain assumption about the way halacha works in relationship to history and science, right? And he's very open to changing things if the mitziyot seems to be different than was understood by Rishonim. In that sense. But right, Linzer, right, who on, let's say, certain other things, people would call him modern. On this issue, if you look at it, right, he goes through the whole summary here, right, and he just says look at the second to last paragraph, and we'll come back to it. Second to last paragraph on 14. Now, does this scholarship have any significance as far as halacha is concerned? This is not a trivial question, since for people who have celiac disease and are gluten intolerant, the inclusion of oats as one of the five grains is of utmost importance. Since oats has no gluten, which was one reason to suspect their inclusion in the first place, their inclusion in the list allows gluten intolerant people to have bread from oats and eat matzah at the Seder night. Remember that it was Rashi who identified Shuol as oats, and this identification was repeated by many Rishonim. We thus have a prime example of when science and halacha collide. Which do we follow? The traditional identification, the one that scholars have concluded, is the original accurate identification. So if I had asked you, what would someone, quote unquote, on the left modern side of the Orthodox community say, right? Which side of the equation would he come out on?
So you
might have guessed. So that's the question. Here there's a tension, right? There's a tension. Again, I'm not trying to say that it's predictive. At this point, I am not trying to tell you. To postum like X, postum like Y, right? I just want to show you that this isn't a clean, Haredi, not Haredi, right-wing, left-wing divide. It just isn't. Because Rebbe Frati, who is, again, was the shamash for Blyashev and is clearly very much ensconced in the Haredi world, comes to the same conclusion, basically, as Rabbi Linzer, right? Which is, if you look, here's his summary. A wonderful story illustrating the tension exactly in our topic is found on Hebrew Wikipedia under the topic Chamishit Minei Dagon. Here is the story. Professor Felix relates that on the basis of identification, Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to make a bracha of shahakal on his morning breakfast of oatmeal. Right? So for a while, Shlomo Zalman accepted Professor Felix's He did this for 2 years until Rav Shlomo Yashiv yelled at him with the critique that one cannot change what has been the Jewish custom over hundreds of years going back to the time of the Rishonim just because of one scholar's findings. This conclusion actually reflects the basic way that halacha operates. While new information can be integrated and lead to reassessment, nevertheless, there is a canonization process of certain works. Example, the Babylonian Talmud and certain interpretations, those of Rishonim, which weigh the most heavily in halacha. In the end, the halachic truth may diverge from the historical or scientific truth. Nevertheless, halacha is what books, authorities, interpretations have been accepted as binding by the Jewish people committed to halacha. When conflicts between halacha and science or experience become blatant and incontrovertible, greater assessment might take place. This is a discussion for another time. In closing, it is interesting to compare the methodological issues raised here with those raised in prohibition of Chadash, da da da. But in the end of the day,
I feel like you also took this story out of context, because Rabbi Yasser might have said that, but simply for different reasons, and that he probably would have said that.
Very good. So, So I wanted you to notice that, right? Which that they end up at the place in very different ways. Is that, right? Rabbi Yashiv and Rabbi Frati argue that A, Misora comes first, and B, if Misora says X, then the scientist must be wrong, right? Like empirically wrong. Right? Linzer isn't willing to say that. He's willing to say, listen, it may be true that empiricism is important, but halacha sometimes will not line up. I'm not sure which.
He's still using the front.
Correct. Now, I will be honest, I don't know, and you can think about this. Which one is more radical methodologically? Right? Which is more radical methodologically? To say that Misora must be right, and therefore there must be something wrong with the science? Or Misora is right even when it's wrong factually? Right? I tend to think the second. Right? Meaning, I understand that the first one has certain benefits because it doesn't deny that the science has value. But on the other hand, I would rather you say, maybe the science isn't right, but Misora doesn't go against science. Misora can tell you that maybe the science is making a mistake. Then we don't care about science sometimes, right? But we believe in it, but don't care about it, right? That's like a methodology.
Like we know that rubbing the ash of a cat in your eye.
Correct. We know this is wrong, and we don't care. Rather than we don't know this is wrong.
Yeah.
Right. So, if you asked me, in my personal opinion, if you asked me my personal thing, and I'm not telling you to Boston this way, my personal comfort is with Rav Schechter first, which is science matters, and if it becomes very clear that a certain tradition in halacha was not correct science, then we should change what we do, which is why we are tchelet, right? Which is why I don't let my kids say mizonot on oats, despite the fact that they're celiac, right? Because I'm very convinced by Rav Schechter's view of the world. My second is actually Rav Frati, which is maybe science is not right, because science it's not always right. Not everything an academic happens to say is right. And if you are convinced the Misora says something, so that's reason to question the veracity. Not ironclad, but it's a reason to question the veracity. But you know, Rabbi Frati doesn't actually say Misora trumps reality. He says that Misora trumps Felix, and I got other scientists to say that Felix might not be right, and therefore I'm not going to accept him, which I'm actually not so uncomfortable with, right? Which is why, right? Meaning, because again, there are academics who said, no, Felix is not right. The one I'm actually least comfortable saying is, we accept the academics historically and then say we don't care. Right? That's the one in my hierarchy, my bias. Again, this is my bias. I will just point out that I was talking to Reis Sklar about this. One of the things I like about this sugya is that it forces you to think about halachic methodology. It shows you that halachic methodology is not something that you can predict with like these facile right-left distinctions. It's just not, right? Like process... it's complicated. Besides the fact that it's an interesting sugya, I think it draws attention to the fact in which things are complicated, right? They're complicated, right? You can't predict things, and sometimes, you are going to be forced to pick between different values, right? Because in this case, my commitment to Rav Schechter's epistemic claims about the role of science in halacha make my kids' life harder. Right, like for me, this is not a theoretical cost. right? There is a interpersonal cost to my children, right? That I end up paying because of my conviction that you have to take science seriously and my conviction that oats are probably not, right? Now, I may be wrong, right? But I just want to point, right? I'm not saying that I'm definitely right. And on Pesach, I told my kids to have oat matzah because I agree that I don't think it's 100-0, right? I'm not saying that it's 100-0 and rot. Well, I told them not to make a bracha. No, about chilled matzah. I said be yotze with mine because I'm not sure. But again, it was very complicated because for me it was, right, it was messy. It was maybe oats really are the five grains and my kids aren't bar mitzvah yet and therefore the stakes of them having, right, of having the mitzvah are lower to begin with and pediatric celiac is worse than celiac later on and therefore the cost of me insisting that they would have wheat matzah, right, is more than maybe it would be in 10 years, right, and therefore that's more reason to accept the positions that, and this we're not going to get into, that lowers the bar of what counts as a choleh to exempt you from mitzvah, right? It was a very complicated cheshbon that led me to think that at least for now, my non-bar mitzvah children, the right thing for them to do was to have oat matzah. But I will tell you that Meir wasn't comfortable with it, right? Meir said, but why am I having oat matzah? It's not the five grains. And I had to explain to him, yes, but you're a child. And it's not definitely not the five grains. It's just that under normal circumstances, I tell you to make, right, hadama and shahakal because I don't think on balance it's one of the five grains.
He's saying shahakal anyways. Isn't that he's kind of throwing his water at that point?
No, because you can hedge, right? You can hedge.
Shahakal works for.
No, I mean, that thing is you can hedge.
Well, no, see, if you can't say shahakal, so you know he's not shahakal.
Of course you can. Of course you can. That's exactly what shahakal is.
No, I'm saying, like, if you know that this thing is
lechatchila, you shouldn't, but if you did it, it works. If you say shahakal and apple, it works.
If there's a legitimate suffix.
You shouldn't. And when there's a legitimate suffix, shahakal is the right thing to do. Correct. Right? So I wanted to talk about this because it highlights sometimes the complexity of a halacha in general, but this particular case, like the case that I mentioned from Rabbi Shachter, brings, right, it's like if I had to sit in a vacuum and say, put a bunch of values that identify someone who's modern on the board, right? Not telling them what it's about. One might be inclusivity, right? And you know, making people's lives easier or something like that. And another might be, you know, science, right? Whatever. But to realize that that's very nice in theory. In practice, sometimes they come in conflict. Okay, now, again, they don't necessarily come in conflict in this sugya, because as I already mentioned, not all academics agreed. It's not like here, all the scientists are on one side and all the rabbis on the other side. It's not like that here. Right? We already saw one academic who said that, no, he's just wrong because he thinks chimutz is about rising rather than about fermentation, right? And therefore about beta amylase. Now, again, it doesn't solve all the problems, but I want to point out that Zohar Ammar, who is probably the greatest current living Talmudic botanist, also isn't convinced by Felix, right? So if you look at 15, this is a summary of Zohar Ammar's article. Right, it's not Zohar Ammar himself. It's a summary. It's a book review of Zohar Ammar. I'm not going to read all, what? I don't know what page, but it's number 15. Source 15, right? So Zohar, this is a review of Zohar Ammar's article. Zohar Ammar, okay, so I'm going to, again, I'm not going to read through everything. The first part of it is about Maror. I gave it to you just, you know, because we spent time on it, so you can look at what he said. Then, if you just run through it, right, after the first break, so he gets to the five grains. And he knows in the second paragraph, Miksoa Zihui Shel Tzmachim, Shemuskarim Mekard Chazal Muktoa Kashem Misubach Malei Sveikot. Trying to figure out what plants are in Chazal is hard. It's full of doubt. Ach Chashuv L'Limud HaTorah. But it's importantly, Timra Chokot Af L'Psikar Halacha. And it's important even for Psak. And he says, Akshayim Novim Mikach She'enam Asur Ritzifa Ekev Merchaka Azman Zmindul Chazal Amenu. The problem is there isn't a contiguous tradition of definitions. Not everything of what we call a vegetable is the same as what Chazal did it. And then he, if you skip to the next paragraph, he said one of the hardest one is Shibboleth Shual, where you can see that the two possibilities are Sigala, / Sikel Siriel, or Aven, or Avione, or whatever you want to pronounce it. Okay? So now if you look after the second break, got it? Where it says Professor Amar? Professor Amar minaseh lochech she'avena nichlelet bin chamishe menei dagon. Right? This is not so simple. This is science against halacha, because Zohar Amar, like I said, is probably the leading botanist now, thinks that Rashi is right. Not like Felix. He thinks Rashi is correct. That Avena is one of the five grains. However, how does he get there? Now, this is very interesting, because what does he do with all the problems that Professor Felix had with the descriptions in the Gemara of Shibboleth Shual? He says, maybe it is Shibboleth Shual, but maybe it's Shifon. Who said Shifon is rye? So look what he says. He says, Inventor Shifon, Inventor Shibboleth Shual, Al Gamal Piaram Magonim, Vos Shimash Piskarot Shashmot Vachemani de Sofrim Yivanim. Right now, in case you think that Professor Amar doesn't care about history and science, he says, why does he believe this? So one is because he has reasons based on the Greek and Romans to believe linguistically that maybe our oats might actually have been included. Second, he's not convinced that the way it rises is not considered chimots. So he says, if you go after where it says footnote 3, he said, Professor Amar Hom Olech Bederach Acheret, the Tov Shekach. Bechlei Yerzol Bechiv Nisyonot Bisug Zem Mechkar Mitoch Iyun Mekor Chazal Bidere Yerushonim Vatzla Vatam Mekor Bidere Nosafim Im Zot Muvan Shiz Nogol Memishna Zihirut. Says, Professor Amar says, obviously you need to do experiments, but you have to be careful. Because Yesh Ladat Lafrid Ben HaKodesh Ben HaChol V'chein Ladat Matai Yesh Lidchashev Yidot Chitzoniot L'dor Pesikat HaLacha. You have to know when you include it, when you don't include outside sources, Matai Yesh Lid Lalemen, when to ignore them. Abikoret Shali Hu Shepesor Amar Min Aseli Yashar Demel Yoter Midashot Ben Masor Ashkenazit Levein Zot Svarat Dira Bavli. So this critique of Professor Amar says that Professor Amar cares too much to bring the Ashkenazim, the Svaradim, and the Bavli and science all together. Says Mutar Ratzoy L'Sakem Shenen Yochon Lachria. He said, what you can say is maybe we're just not sure. V'ladat Mai Shaita Shibboleth Shual. He said maybe the right thing to do is to say we don't really know. Like there's problems, but maybe we don't really know. Then you can say that when you decide scientifically and historically that there's a legitimate suffix, then you can say that the Misora has a role, right? That's not a crazy claim. And he said, basically, more or less, that's where Professor Amar comes out. Correct. It doesn't solve all the problems. I'm not saying it does, but my point is that it's not so neat. I mean, Professor Amar isn't so convinced that Professor Felix is right and that Rashi is wrong versus the Aruch, the other day in the Aruch. Okay, I gave you two more English summaries here, right? You can read the Amar one if you want, but this one that I found by Avram Sokolovsky, I thought was really quite good, and especially, again, I told her, Sklar, it's very rare that I have much more English on my source sheets than he does. But in this particular issue, like, Hebrew doesn't help me. The English barely helps me, right? Meaning, like, 16, right? So I want to go through, and I want to point out it's not just oats. I gave you an English article. I'm not even going to read all of it, but I gave it. It's actually not. If I give you an article and I said it's 4 pages, this is the whole thing. That's not so long. I just gave it to you. I'm sorry I gave you English rather than gave you the 20 pages in Professor Amar's academic Hebrew botany book. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Unbelievable. Okay, and as we're going to see that it's not just oats. We spent most of the time in oats, but it's not just oats. It's also raw, right? It's also Shifon that there's a machloket about. Okay, so let's run through a little bit of what he says, right? He notes a little bit of the history. that people started making oat matzah for celiacs, blah, 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 blah. Okay, I'm going to want you to hold on to this article. What we're going to do tomorrow is come back to Machloket Rambam Ramban, not tomorrow, Sunday, the Machloket Rambam Ramban, which I mentioned, and we're going to see Rabbi Yaakov Ariel's tshuva, not about oats, but about Amilan Chita, the gluten-free wheat. Okay? But I already gave you the summary here, so just hold on to this article. That's what he talks about here. Turn to the second page where we get to the, where B, identification of the five grains. Okay, we'll come back to the halachic issue. So, Shibolet Shual, Avena Oats. So he says, another reason for the doubt regarding whether one can fulfill the obligation of eating matzah on the Avena Oats produced in England is the question of whether they indeed are considered one of the five grains. The Gemara states, Shibolet Shual, Shifon are types of barley. Rye is Dishra. Oats are Shivalei Talon, etc. And we note, again, this whole paragraph that some people learn it as avena, some people learn it as sigala. So now if you skip down, he notes that these are only the two main identifications, but not the only ones. So for example, Romano Low identified Shibolet Shual with Dura sorghum flour, right? Which is yet another one. And therefore, during World War I, when there was a grain shortage, he permitted baking matzah from flour made of this strain. Researchers promote other identifications of Shibolet Shual. Baruch Chizik believes that Shibolet Shual are Byzantine oats. Okay? Let's see. What do they look like? There. Byzantine oats. I guess they look a little bit more... It's called Avez, according to Wikipedia, it's Avena Byzantina. Red oats is a species native to Greece, Turkey, and Cyprus, which is, you know, definitely closer to Eretz Israel than, so let's see. Yeah, I assume that's why it's called that. I know. Shocking, really. Red, very. Okay, let's get a picture of it. I mean, they look, I guess, not really. Not much better. not so much better, but okay. Professor Mordechai Kislev suggested identifying Shibolet Shual with the various strains of oats available today, cultured, Byzantine, and Heber. Gustav Delman identifies Shibolet Shual with wild barley. And Professor Felix says it's double-column barley and brings several proofs. In light of the ambiguity regarding the identification of Shibolet Shual, it seems that there's yet another reason that makes it difficult to rely on the English Avena oat, matzah for matzah mitzvah. Even the poskim do permit this. Tuz are only for those with celiac, who can eat matzah. However, they do not extend the heter to everyone else. Okay, fine. Now let's go quickly. We won't spend too much time, but it is important on Shifon. So what is Shifon? So even the indication of Shifon is problematic and not clear-cut. The Gemara states that Shifon is... Dishra. Professor Mordechai Kislev summarized in the beginning of his article several identifications of Shifon. Rabbeinu Gershom Rashi and Aruch say it is what? Sigala. What does Rashi think Shifon is? What Felix thinks Shibolet Shual is two-road barley. So, by the way, just for the people who say, oh, Rashi, we follow Rashi's Masora, just know that he doesn't think rye is one of the grains. So people sometimes conveniently forget that one, that Rashi thinks that oats are one of the five grains, but he doesn't think rye is one of the five grains. He thinks, so just pointing this out that people are not quite consistent and they don't really know what they're talking about. Others identify Shifon with avena, just to make your nightmare, as some people think that Shifon, what? Shifon? What? So Shifon, he says, it's Segala, this is Rashi. Wait, where is it? No, give me, wait. Okay, give me. Screw your Gemara for a second. Yeah, whatever. I just needed, like, space, and I knew I was looking at the source sheets. Right? No, look at Rashi. Dishra is Segala. Not a Shibolet Shual. He thinks that he thinks that Shifon is Segalov. Yeah, meaning what he agrees with. Rashi agrees with Felix that two road barley is one of the five grains. He just thinks that it's Segalov. It's Shifon, and therefore he doesn't have rye. People don't realize this. They're like, oh, we're following the Zohar of Rashi. No, you're not, because you think rye is one of the five grains, which Rashi did not. Look, so others think it's avena. Right? First of all, some people think it's oats, right? And some say it's spelt, by the way. And others say it's einkorn wheat. Einkorn wheat. So in light of these varying opinions, even if we say matzah baked from these grains or kosher or Pesach can be eaten on Pesach, in terms they can't be used for matzah mitzvah. Fine, there is another problem here, and it is with using oat matzah. Again, I just want you to sort of understand the other issues. One is that there is a misora from the Maharil that you're only supposed to use wheat matzah because we know how fast wheat rises. That's only a minhag, and it's not clear that we paskin like it. Other people say that the reason you should use wheat is because it tastes the best, and therefore it's hidur mitzvah. Again, that's not going to stand in the way of celiacs, right? Because if you say it's hidur mitzvah, but they can't have wheat, and you think oats are one of the five grains, so then that's going to stand in their way. And even if you say that we don't know how fast they rise, then what would that tell you to do? Make it in 4 minutes instead of, you know, wait till 18 or something like that. But again, that's not going to prove it, but you should just know that there are these other concerns that people have with non-wheat matzah, which is, goes beyond whether they think oats or not, is that there are different misoras. The Torah thinks that you're not even supposed to, you have to check wheat because maybe there's barley in it, and even though barley obviously works, but he is afraid that barley rises faster than wheat, and therefore he didn't like using barley either. Now again, obviously none of these concerns, right? Hidur mitzvah, we don't know how much is going to rise. If you make oat matzah in 3 minutes and you think oats are one of the grains, it's not going to stand in the way of a celiac, but you should know that one of the reasons that poskim don't like people using oat matzah, if you don't have a medical reason, right, isn't just because they question that it's oats, it's because of this misora to only use wheat because it's the best of the flours and because we know the most about how it rises. So for example, Rishtarnbach is worried about having oat matzah because of our concerns about it rising. He's not willing to reject it on the basis that it might not be one of the five grains, but because of that, the position he says is that only celiacs should have oat matzah. So if you look here at the bottom of the second to last page, this is an English translation of Rishtarnbach, right, where he says, and in truth, oats are a type of barley and are quick to become leavened, and we do not have a tradition of how to make matzah from the barley in the way which will prevent leavening. And also, oats are very bitter tasting and are impossible to eat unless heated up with fire. And when they are heated, they excrete water profusely. This excretion is comparable to fruit juice, and this, after this process, the dough should not be kneaded in water, which quickens the leavening process. Moreover, there is concern the fruit juice itself hastens the leavening. While fruit juice is not It's said not to cause leavening. In this case, the oats are heated in intense heat and give off moisture more than its nature. We do not have this tradition that fruit does not cause leavening in this case. Here, since the moisture is so strong and plentiful, we might say that the oats leaven in the water given off from them much faster than water alone, and for the amount required for the obligation of matzah, that is, a kezayit of matzah and the like, since he does not have an alternative, he can oat matzah, but for the remaining days of Pesach, it's proper to bake matzah and fruit juice alone, right? So he's, right, the rest of it, he thinks you should have, right, matzah shira without water does not cause leavening, and should we note on the box, this matzah is intended only for those who are in, for the infirm who cannot eat, regular matzah. Some people were so concerned about this problem that even though they believe oats are one of the five grains, they won't allow it even for celiacs. So that, if you look at the Minchas Yitzchak at the bottom here, he says, but regarding barley flour, which is quick to leaven, the laws have not been clarified. And we have to write a new Shulchan Aruch to clarify every detail. Who can shoulder such a responsibility? In light of this, we need to be concerned even b'diavad that nothing happened, which in tandem with the rate of leavening in barley, which is faster than wheat, can qualify it even b'diavad. And I believe that it is rare there's a person who cannot tolerate merely a kazayat of wheat matzah only once a year. For this reason, it is my humble opinion that to begin with, one should not enter into a situation in which one could possibly consume chametz, since there is a major concern, even b'diavad, as I wrote above. In light of these concerns, there is uncertainty among the poskim regarding the possibility that non-wheat matzah could actually be chametz. As such, it is difficult to determine whether matzah made from grains other than wheat can actually be kosher for Pesach. Conclusion. From the above discussion, we see that there is a question about the identification of the various types of grains. For this reason, even if there was no concern that matzah from these grains would be considered chametz, it's still unclear whether they can be used to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night. This is especially the case with low-gluten oat matzah. For this reason, the poskim do not permit such matzah to the general public and are lenient only for those with celiac and then only to fulfill the obligation of eating matzah. Moreover, there are poskim who believe that matzah made from flours other than wheat, such as rye, can leaven more quickly and possibly be chametz. This is because we do not possess the halachic information about the signs of leavening on these other flours and what actions are necessary to prevent leavening. For all these reasons, the heter for those with celiac to eat matzah should not be seen as a heter for the general public. Not everyone agrees with that. Some people do. Okay, so let's summarize what we've seen. So what we did was the following, right? We looked at the five grains in the Mishnah. We noted that the simple pshat is these are specific, even though we noted that Safrai is not convinced by that on an academic level, even though that's simple pshat in the Gemara. Then we said, okay, how do we identify these grains? One is to look at the descriptions in Chazal, and the other is to figure out what chimutz is. We noted a few possibilities of what chimutz is. One is rising. Now, if it's rising, so then it might be about gluten, but it might be that you have different standards of rising. It might be that it's not. It might be about fermentation. Based on both the descriptions in Chazal and the chimutz, we saw that some, like Professor Felix, argue that oats cannot be in the grains at all because they don't fit the description in Chazal because they're neither a subsection of barley. They don't grow in rows. Right, and they don't rise. There were two ways to push back on Professor Felix. One was to argue that he's not necessarily right scientifically. So, for example, Zohar Amar isn't convinced that he's right. That they're not in it because he says maybe historically you're wrong. Maybe they did have oats. Right, Professor Felix, they didn't have oats in the time of Chazal. He said maybe they did. How he deals with all the descriptions, I'm not sure. Others say that maybe chimutz isn't about, focus at least on the chimutz part, maybe it's not about rising, which would push towards gluten, maybe it's about fermentation. Right? The other way is to say that is to rely on Masora, but that subdivides into one of two ways. One is to say we don't care about science, which was Roy Linzer's approach. The other is to say that Masora tells us that the academic isn't correct. Right, and there were different versions of that. There was the Rebbefrati version, which was very confident, which was Misora tells us Misora is that scientist is definitely wrong. And then there was the more hesitant approach of Professor Amar, which was
we have other scientists
and that the science is not 100% clear, and when it's not 100% clear,
we should probably.
And again, going back, and remember, Safrai said maybe, despite the implication of the Gemara, Chamishin Minei Dagon is a more broader category, in which case. Lav dafka. Now, we noted that it's not just oats that there's a machloket about. The truth is that oats could get backdoor a different way, because theoretically it might not fit shibol et shul, but it might fit shifon. We noted by shifon there's like multiple dayot of what shifon is. We went through a few of them. Right, and I gave you, if you want to look, Rabbi Linzer also has a summary. Right? When it comes to shifon, Rashi says it's sigala, which is, sorry, sigala might be rye. Sigala might be rye. I take that back. It might be rye, but it might be the two-road barley, right? However, he thinks that rye is wrong because rye, right? Professor Felix thinks rye is wrong because that also wasn't in Eretz Yisrael. Felix thinks that kusmin is kusemet, which is emmer wheat, right? He doesn't think that's spelt either. He thinks it's emmer wheat, right? So that would give you spelt and farro, but no rye. Right, so you just have to realize that there's a lot of these aren't clear. It's not just oats. Oats is just the most famous. Okay, that's basically the issues that I wanted to deal with some of the background historically and scientifically and the meta concerns methodologically in Pesach, which I think are really, really important to think about and to not oversimplify things, right? To realize that it's complicated. I'm right. Okay. I think we actually have just enough time to really properly now introduce the Machloket Rambam Ramban, even though we'll talk about it more tomorrow. So we'll turn back to page 5, okay? So as we saw, the rule that we have here for what can be used for chametz, page 1, right, page 1, is that what's the rule for matzah? It needs to be something that's bali de chimutz. But as I said, what are the two ways to understand that?
Rising.
So one is it's fermenting or rising, but what is bali de chimutz? Either it means that this actually has to rise, or it's the species that could rise. And that is in Machloket Rambam Ramban. So if you look, the Rambam says as follows. So, Ose isa min achitim u min ha'oretz. If you make dough from flour or from wheat or rice, im yesh ba tam dagan, yotze v'dei chovato. If it tastes like, and this is a halacha called grera.
You're mixing both.
Yes. This is a explicit sugya in challah. That works. Isa da klavim. If you have bread that you're making for animals, bizman sharom ochlim menu, if it's meant for the shepherd and the dogs, so then it's also human food. If it's only animal treats, then animal food doesn't work. Because you didn't guard it for matzah. Matzah shaloshu b'mei peirot. But what if it was in fruit juice? You are yotze. But you shouldn't, because it's lechem oni. We're going to see the Gemara inside tomorrow, or Sunday. Okay, but I just want you to get there, and then we'll go back. The problem is that really, for this Machloket Rambam Ramban, we should do fruit juice matzah first, and egg matzah. I'm not sure which order to do this, actually. We'll see. The problem is that there's another sugya which is much less known, which is pat hadra, right? Which is wheat matzah but made of the chaff, which actually tests this more, especially with regards to. I don't know which one we'll do both. I have both source sheets ready. Maybe we'll do egg matzah first. Maybe we'll do that first and then do pat hadra. I don't know. We'll do one or the other. Okay, but let's get the machloket clear in our minds. So sweet matzah, right, made with fruit juice, the Rambam says, technically you're yotze, but you shouldn't because not lechem oni. Right, so the Gemara is going to tell you you're not supposed to use it because not lechem oni. But the question is, so the Gemara is going to say, as we'll see, that matzah made with fruit juice doesn't rise. Okay? So we're going to see this. But I just want to get you the bit. I know we're doing this a little bit backwards, but it's important to understand this machloket. The Rambam says, okay, it doesn't rise, but you can still, in theory, it's still called matzah. Why? Because what does he clearly hold?
It needs to be from a grain that can.
Correct. It has to be from a grain that can become, that can rise. So it's not ideal, but that's because it's not lechem oni. It's a rich dough. But fundamentally, he calls it, even though Chazal say it doesn't rise, what does he call it? Matzah. That we'll do on Sunday. What liquids, okay?
I don't understand why the Rambam says that you can be yotze matzah with meferos, but not the other things which are also sweet. Meaning, like, because if there's a problem in lechemoni by shemen and dvash and yain, so why would there not be a problem with lechemoni and meferos?
So we're going to see that. We're going to continue in the Gemara. I just want to get the machlok. I'm probably doing this a little bit backwards, but it's important to just understand, see the machloket once, and then we'll flesh it out tomorrow or Sunday. But the Rambam, the important thing to realize is that the fundamental claim of the Rambam here is that bali de chimutz means the species that can have chimutz, whatever chimutz is. The Ramban, if I just give you one line of it, disagrees. He says, v'im below mayim, right, it says if it doesn't have water, the reason you're not yotze is because
it
won't be able to rise. Which means that according to the Ramban, what does bali dechimot mean?
It's literally not to be able to rise.
Correct. Now, if you broaden this, it's a very interesting machloket. Right? Because we've talked about, again, so many times over this year, how much matzah and chametz are connected. According to the Ramban, what does he think the connection is between matzah and chametz? Yeah, meaning it's literally stunted chametz. Right? Like, that's what he thinks it is. That matzah is stunted chametz. It has to be that this actual dough could have become matzah, and I stopped it early. Sorry, it could have become chametz, and I stopped it early. It's literally stunted. Matzah is stunted chametz. The Rambam doesn't believe that. The Rambam thinks that in what way are matzah and chametz connected?
They're made out of the same thing.
That they're made of the same thing. It doesn't mean that my actual matzah has to have ever have had the potential to become chametz. It doesn't.
Right,
it's
just not the same.
It's just that they have to be the same ingredients, right? So the Ramban is a much more.
Is it like a nafkamina between the two?
Yes.
The ability to use fruit juice.
The ability to use fruit juice, right? Because according to the Rambam, if I have matzah with fruit juice, it's not ideal, but it works. It's called matzah. Because even though it'll never rise, it's a species that could have risen.
Wait. So within the Rambam,
and according to the Ramban, you're not yotzei at all, because since fruit juice prevents it from rising, it isn't matzah. Not that it's just matzah, but it's matzah shira. It's not matzah. And the other major one, and again, this is, I guess we'll do it maybe in two source packets, is amilan chita, is wheat with gluten removed.
Right.
Which exists now. Right? Where?
Is there a lechatchila to the other within the Rambam, do you think? Or?
Obviously. Lechatchila, you can't use it because it doesn't have the second quality of being of lechem oni. Everyone agrees you can't use it Saturday night. What?
No, he didn't say.
No,
he didn't say it's not matzah. He said you shouldn't.
It is matzah, but it's not. But it's not lechemoni.
He didn't say that.
He only said by other
ones. Matzah shalosh mepera yotze b'dechav ha'pesach aval ein lashonot. Oh, you're right.
Yeah.
We're gonna come back to this again, but for the moment, hold it. Okay.
I'm also confused. If we can't use it anyway on Seder night, then what makes a difference? If it's not matzah, then it's just not in the category of chametz or matzah. Well,
according to Rambam, we care. According to Rambam, it's fine. It's just not right. Seder worthy.
And use it for, wait. So we.
The Rambam says it's matzah. So it's not Seder worthy.
Not so. It's not.
According to Rambam, it's not matzah. Again, we're going
to.
Maybe I shouldn't have introduced the main chakira to you and I should have gone to the sugi, but I wanted you to just understand this, right? In the context of chimutz. Just one second, okay? But, again, on Sunday we'll focus on the main part of the sugi. Why do I bring it up now? Because I want to just put oats behind us and to realize, one second, that there is a relevance to oats, and that is. Is that if you think that chimutz is rising, so look at Rabbi David Cohn's article in 6. He said machloka is relevant to oat matzah because oats are different from other grains in that they must be heat treated before stored. So this is something you have to realize: is that this is the other nafkamina, is that oat matzah, not oats in general, but oat matzah in general are heat treated, which means that even the minimal rising that they get, the oats used for oat matzah can't even rise that much. And therefore, this is the last problem I wanted to deal with you with oat matzah, which is, okay, so what if you assume, let's say you assume that the rising that oats would get counts for chimutz, and that the oats are the grain. So you think that oat matzah works. But practically, the oats that you have are heat treated, and therefore these oats could never have become chametz. Even by your understanding of chametz. Very good. So he says, so after that treatment, they're unable to become chametz as per the Gemara. If so, according to the understanding of Ramban, that one may only use matzah made from a mixture which could have been chametz if left alone for long enough, oat matzah would not seem to be acceptable for use of the Seder since heat treated oats cannot become chametz even if they are mixed with water. This concern would not apply to spelt matzah, which may be a solution for some people allergic to wheat. Thus, it turns out that in addition to everything we've been talking about until now, using oat matzah the Seder depends on whether one follows the opinion of the Rambam or the Ramban. Which opinion is accepted? A number of Achronim, including Prima Gadim and Graz, that's the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, both have seem to be based on Magen Avraham, appear to follow the strict opinion of Ramban. Chayadam cites a number of proofs of Rambam's position and concludes his discussion with the statement that one may rely on Rambam and Shad HaTchak, a time of Arjanin. The statement indicates he prefers the strict opinion wherever possible. The reticence of Poskim to rely on the lenient opinion is mirrored in Shevet Alevi, who in a tshuva written to Diane Usher Westheim, the certifying rabbi, Rabbi Machsher for Rabbi Kestenbaum's Oat Matzah, notes that in case of great need, a celiac may rely on Chayadam slash Rambam and eat Oat Matzah at the Seder, but should have someone else recite the Bracha of Achilat Matzah. So again, these are people who think that oats are the...
Meaning if you just picked fresh oats and then made them, then it would be...
Look, so this is why I gave you David Cohn's article, because this is also just you understand the Metziut. Right, not just the lumdos, but in recent years, however, so he said the first group of people who made oat matzah used heat treated matzah. Then what happened? In recent years, however, another group known as the Lakewood Matzah Bakery has begun producing gluten free oat matzah, which avoid rancidity without ever heat treating the oats. These matzah are free of the above concern and may definitely be used the same, even according to the Rambam. The information presented above is true for oat matzah baked in, this is already 2010. Over the years, Rabbi Kestenbaum and Westheim have made a number of unsuccessful attempts to use oats, which are not heat-treated, but believe that for 2011, beyond their matzah, it will meet this higher standard. At this point, I think it's actually the standard, that the oat matzah are not heat-treated.
Even according to the Ramban?
Yeah, it should be. Even according to the Ramban, yeah, that's probably a typo. Even according to the Ramban. Yeah. Okay, so, but you should just know, and I just, give me 2 minutes. So you should just know that in addition to the question of oats, right, whether they're one of the five grains and all the interesting things we talked about there. The other problems are the thing we talked about for about 10 minutes, which is the minhag to only use wheat because either of hidra mitzvah or because we know how likely it is to become chametz. If it's about hidra mitzvah and you think that oats are one of the five grains, then obviously you could use it. If you think it might become chametz, then you would say avoid it, obviously. Then there's the problem of heat treating, which is subject to Machloket Rambam Ramban, but at this point I don't think it's an issue. I think at this point they're not heat-treated. The very last issue, and we're really not going to spend time on it, but I just want you to know that it exists, because another word about halachic process. I remember once I was at a thing with Ruchelstein, and someone asked him, asked him a question about whether certain people can paskin, and I won't get the whole thing, because whatever. But he said, remember, just because someone's trained in a particular area of halacha doesn't mean they can paskin even in that area. Why? But why? Not just that. So, yeah, so he said, but to give a very simple example, without getting into all the complicated things that you know from me, a very simple reason is that sometimes what looks like a kosher shaila is really a suffix shaila. Right? Right? Meaning, and that's not a local thing. The halachot of sveikot, right, of how do you deal with doubt, is a universal thing, right? So this is one of the problems here, is that after you get through everything here, one of the big things that's weighing in the background is if someone who was celiac had a piece of, let's say, wheat matzah, they would get sick. How sick? So some will have a stomach. So some, very few people will be sick on a stomach. If it's sakana nefashot, everyone agrees you don't have to do it. Most people will either get a stomachache, right, at the low end, or will be bedridden for 3 days at the higher end. Okay, celiacs react very differently. Second thing is that the other thing about celiac is that there's long-term effects. Right? There's long-term effects. It damages the stomach, it damages the small intestine, it can lead to stomach cancer, right? But the question of how much wheat you'd have to ingest to cause that problem is not something that's clear, and it depends on the celiac, and it depends on pediatrics and not pediatric, blah, 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 blah. Therefore, one of the major questions, lemaisa, to figure out what celiac should do, besides the oat thing, is figure out the mitzvah, how bad it'll be, and then the question of, short of pikuach nefesh, how much tzar slash chole exempts you from a mitzvah aseh d'oraita. The major source in this regard is a Gemara that says that Rebbe was very sensitive to wine, And once he would have the arbakosod, he wouldn't drink wine all year except for arbakosod. And when he would, it would give him a headache from Pesach to Shavuot.
Right.
And the Gemara is nifzak l'halacha. So the simple pshat of that Gemara is what? That even extreme sickness might not exempt you from mitzvah to say, and that's a mitzvah to say derabbanan. That's even derabbanan, right? Nevertheless, there are some poskim who assume that that was just his chumrah, or maybe it's special by Raposo to the Pirzim Enisa. And other people, right, and suggest that either that chole of Nofel Lemishkov exempts you from all mitzvot, or possibly other poskim, like Rav Moshe Feinstein, raised the standard that because by mitzvah to say you only have to give up a fifth of your wealth, so maybe if you get to the point, so right, so you'd have to figure, no, it's, if I would be willing to spend a fifth of my wealth to avoid that level of illness, right? So they're all types, so, but the point is that the other thing that lurks in the background here is how sick is someone going to get by having wheat matzah, and how, what standard do you have in this general thing of chola and mitzvah? Okay, and in order to paskin on the shaila of what a celiac should do on Pesach, you don't just need to figure out what are oats and whatever. It's also worth noting, by the way, that not all celiacs can handle oats, because oats do have parallel proteins that for some people also bothers them. That's important to know. Not most, but there are some. I know some. Like one of our friends has a kid who's celiac, and he does react to oats. He can't have oats. So that may not be a solution for them. And then, especially for someone like that, you have to ask, okay, well, how sick is it going to get? How sick is it to get out of mitzvot? And a much more complicated question is, what happens if you're asymptomatic celiac? How does halacha even view long-term effects? Right? And that's a very complicated question because Chazal, why is it such a complicated question? Because Chazal wouldn't have known. Right? Like, it's not even, like, it's very hard to figure out what Chazal would have said because the fact that we even know that there are long-term effects is a modern question. Exactly, right? Chazal, when they talk of sickness, always talk symptomatic. And therefore, so the question of chole is the entire sugya in and of itself.
Oh my God.
I can send you my makorot on it. I don't want to go through a whole shir on it. But many. It's a very complicated sugya, right? But you have to understand that to paskin, it's not just enough to spend, to do what we did for the last 2 days and figure out oats and then wheat. You also have to figure out, okay, but what's the mitzvah on the ground and how do you chola, which is a much more universal shiloh, which happens at an application here. Okay.
Yeah,
tomorrow, I guess we'll switch it around. So Sunday, let's do matzah shira, and then we'll come back to pat hadra'a, which is the matzah made of the chaff, right? These sort of interlock, so you're going to have to sort of, as they say in Yiddish, halt cup through all of them, but we'll leave it there, okay? Yeah.